From Los Angeles, California, this is the Writer's Strike Chronicles, and I'm Tanya Barnes. Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, February 11th, 2008, day 99 of the Writer's Strike. In today's episode, we'll wrap up a series of recordings made at the last big picketing event in front of Disney Studios. Here, we'll talk to strike captain Michael Tabb and writers Bill Tabb and Garrick Dowin. These recordings were made a few days before the leadership of the WGA met with its members this past Saturday to discuss the terms of a proposed agreement between the AMPTP. The official word from the WGA is that the proposed 2008 minimum basic agreement has been voted upon and also unanimously recommended. It will now be submitted to the WGA membership for ratification voting, which will take place over the next few weeks. The most immediate issue, however, is to address as to whether to lift the restraining order and end the strike during the ratification process, and that vote will take place on Tuesday, February 12, 2008. Until those votes are counted, the WGA are still on strike. However, picketing has been suspended and no picketing is scheduled for today or tomorrow. Okay, that's the big news for now. Let's begin today's episode with strike captain Michael Tabb at Disney Studios. So I'm at the...
Alameda Gate of Disney Lot.
What's your name?
Michael Tabb.
Michael, tell me a little bit about this particular gate and what's going on today.
Well, we've been here, obviously, from the very beginning. This gate has been a phenomenal group of they're activists, but we're also just excited to be together. A lot of us are feature writers, and then there are some TV writers who are used to having social interaction with other writers because they work in writers' rooms. But then there are the feature guys. We're like the wallflowers. We go off, we write in our little corners, our little rooms, and then we bring material in, they critique it, and we go back and we write by ourselves. And this has been one of the most socially inviting, creatively engaging atmospheres I've ever been in. I love the producers I work with, and I'm eager and excited, but also wary of whatever deal may come, and we want to be off the line, but we won't know what that deal will be until Saturday. We don't know what we're being offered yet, but we're excited about that. But this gate is a group of just some of the most nice, authentic, kind people that I've ever had a chance to know. It's like I'm back in film school again, and I learned so much from just hanging out with these guys. And you know, I know a lot. I mean, I went to all the right schools, and then you're constantly learning though from all the professionals you're hanging out with. I mean, I went to USC, I went to NYU Tisch, and I went to UCLA Masters certificate program for screenwriters in the School of Film and Television. And you get here, and then it's like I'm back in film school, and I'm learning from the best, the guys who write the best shows on television, whether it's like Mark Guggenheim, who just started the new show Eli Stone. You know, he's one of the showrunners on that. And then you have other guys here who haven't been discovered at all and haven't gotten their big chance to see one of their movies made. And it's just an incredible array of talent and people in all different genres. You know, you have comedy writers, drama writers, feature guys, TV guys, people who've made their living the last 5 years on the internet. So this means a lot to them for the WGA to have jurisdiction so they can finally secure a decent wage for themselves. And so we're just thrilled to spend my time making a stand with such amazing people and people who I consider now my friends, not just my friends, my family. These people are my family. I didn't know half these people before I got here, and now I'd never want to know another day of my life without them.
But what if the strike ends? Have you thought about what it's going to be like when you don't have this family with you every day and facing the same challenge?
Well, the great thing is that we've gotten each other's numbers. We've gotten each other's names, and we are now our own army. We are united, and we will always be united, whether we're on a line or we're not, because we're all in the same boat together, along with the actors. The thing that a lot of people don't realize, and they don't understand the details of, is the fact that the DGA has very different deal points than we do. They work very differently. The big-name directors, they get profit participation, so residuals don't mean as much to them. But with actors and us, residuals are our livelihoods, what keeps us being able to pay our mortgages, between jobs. And Lord knows we spend most of our time between jobs. So it's great. The unity with SAG has made this strike what it is. I think unless we had had this unity with SAG and hadn't been able to stop the Golden Globes, I don't think we would be having the situation we have. So there's no one we could thank more than SAG. These are our brothers and our sisters, and they've been out here on the line with us. You know, and those people who show up, there are actors who've walked here every day with me since I started. And I started at the beginning. And it's just great to have that interplay, to have that sacred play between writers and actors, because we're so often kept away from each other, because we write before the director comes on, then the director puts an understandable wedge, because it's his project, between the writer and the people who are going to play our material and the words we say. And sometimes they don't know why that's written the way it's written, or there's a setup to another setup to a payoff, and it can get ruined unless the writer is involved. And not that we need to be involved, but that's why so many writers kind of want to direct as well. The question is whether you're good at crowd control. Because directing is the toughest job. You know, you have to wrangle so much to be able to make everything work. It's a wonder directors don't go nuts. I'm trying right now for the first time for Strike TV to direct my own piece.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Strike TV is going to be run through UnitedHollywood.com.
Yeah, we've done a show on them.
Fantastic. Well, they're doing a page that's going to be a link from there to a bunch of shows that we're hopefully using SAG actors. As many of us who can get SAG actors, we're getting SAG actors to be in our little shorts, vignettes, sketches, webisodes, or full like televised episodes. And we're making them for the internet, and then all the money that we raise from airing them for whoever watches it, whoever clicks on it, if their eyeball, you know, for every eyeball that winds up on the internet on that webpage that sees a banner ad, that the charity gets money, and it's all going to charity for all the people who've been affected that are not writers by this strike. I feel like I'm talking very jumbly.
Oh no, you're doing great. No, you're doing great. But let's move over to something else, because we've established where we are and what's going on. Tell me a little bit about yourself. What got you in the Guild?
I almost got in the Guild, but was 2 points shy back in the year 2000 when I set up a motion picture called Troy, and then that deal fell apart, and they developed a different Troy at the same studio. I'm not going to go into the details.
Yeah,
it's pretty ugly.
It sounds like a story.
It's a story. But then 2 years ago, I was hired to write an adaptation of a novel called In the Fall by Jeffrey Lent. Brilliant novelist, very Faulkner. He lives, actually, he writes out in a barn in Vermont in the middle of the wilderness. It's amazing. And I got this job, and they weren't a union company yet. And I was up against some amazing Academy Award and Pulitzer Prize winning authors for this job. And I, first of all, I said, why are you picking me? And then when they were done picking me, they said, well, I don't know if we need to do this union. And I said, actually, you do. I have 3 kids, and I need health care. Are you telling me you want me to do my job and all this work and then not be able to take care of my children at night? How can I concentrate on my work if my children can't go see a doctor when they get sick? And through our negotiation, I got them to become a signatory, and then that got me into the Guild. So if you stand strong and you realize you are worth it, and you do deserve health care, and you deserve a union, and you deserve to stand united with other artists who can stand and back you up, that's what SAG is about. That's what I think the Writers Guild is about. It's about not standing alone, because creativity can be so lonely. And when you have people backing you up who have the same interest in you and they want to take care of their families, you don't have to be a poor artist in this day and age when art itself is so beneficial to the people. It's so beneficial to the studios. People are making fortunes off of what we do, and I want them to. I want them all to get rich on my work. I also, though, would like to be able to pay my bills and pay my mortgage, and there's no reason there's a single actor or a writer in this world that shouldn't also be able to do that. I have no problem with any union, because any idea of a union itself is so important in this day and age, when what corporations would love to do is become giant Walmarts, and there's no health care, there's no way of taking care of your family, there's no pension, and they will work you into your grave and never give you a vacation until you're there. Your vacation is a trip to see St. Peter, and you know what? I want a little more beach time before that.
Okay. That's brilliant. As we wrap this up, what is the more powerful tool for the democracy, the more powerful tool for artists and writers? Technology, standalone, legacy notwithstanding, what is the more powerful invention, the printing press or the internet, and why?
I believe that those are apple and oranges, and they both changed the world. The printing press actually is what allowed people to have a common opinion. One person could share his view with everybody. Leaflets in ancient France, but it's because of leaflets and the ability to communicate through writing that you had revolutions.
Thomas Paine.
You look at the history of the world, the written word on the printing press is a changing voice of everything. But I can tell you right now, on this day, that the writer's strike would be nowhere near where it is if it wasn't for the internet. Because the conglomerates and money now owns not just the printing press. It also owns the networks. It owns feature films. It owns everything except for the internet. They don't have that cornered. So we have been able to reach out to people and get people behind our side of this argument only because of the internet. So to say one is any good without the other, it wouldn't be. There would be no internet unless people learned to communicate in mass through the printing press. But right now the printing press is stifled by the people who own it, and that it takes a lot of money to do it. And that there needs to be freedom of voice, and we're getting that freedom right now on the internet, which is why fighting for our rights there, and to make sure that we can be heard, and to make sure that we are cut in on those profits throughout the world, no matter how often and how many languages they're divvied into. That's what we're fighting for, because otherwise we can't be heard, and we have no control, and we kowtow to the people that run things.
Parting shots as we wrap this up. Take me home.
All I can say is that sometimes when you get on a strike, sometimes in any relationship, be it business or personal, you have to sit down the people who you are working with or having your friendship with and say, you're not treating me right. And that's all it is. The producers are our dear friends. They're my comrades and the people I love to work with. Without them, my work, which is all creative, would not have all the commercial aspects that they bring to it, that they make sure that my work has in it before it goes out. But sometimes you have to step away from your friends so that they, in a relationship of friendship, they miss you and the heart grows fonder. In a business relationship, they miss you and the money in their pocket gets slimmer. And they realize that one way or the other, when there is absence of that relationship, there is an impact. And that impact forces people to hopefully step back in and make a wonderful resolution where people can get along and get back to work and get back to their friendships. And that's all we're hoping for on Saturday.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Go SAG. You guys rock.
That was Strike Captain Michael Tabb at Disney Studios. Coming up is writer Bill Tobb.
Let's lay it, because you've got a lot of gold here. What's your name? And where are we at, and what have you done?
My name is Bill Tobb, T-A-U-B, recently I just learned that the TV series House has a character called Dr. Taub, and I asked the executive producer, I said, where did you come up with that character name? And he said, well, we needed a name, an ethnic name, and yours came up. So I am now Dr. Taub on House. But anyway, I've been a member of the WGA for over 25 years. My background is television. I'm a television baby, and I love television, and that's my first love. And I was around for the strike of 88.
Bring it. Tell me about that.
And I would have to say that my take on what's going on now, I was working on a series in 88 and lost an awful lot over the 5 months of that strike and was dissatisfied. And now
Dissatisfied with what? The results of the...
With the result of it, absolutely. The membership, the result. And I think what's happened now is a lot of what's going on now, and it's unfortunate because I think the parties bring it on themselves, is a basic distrust and a basic not believing anything that's said. Because what came out of 88, and you might have heard it before, is this whole DVD thing, which is 85 and 88, where they came to us and they said, look, this is a new technology. We're not sure where this business is going. Let us make a token deal just to start. And when it turns out to be profitable, we'll cut you in. Well, of course, over the next 20 years, it's turned out to be an absolute boon for the industry. And whenever the guilds, and this is a cross-guild proposition, whenever the guilds go back to them and say, wait a minute, what about that cutting us in? They say, forget about it. All right. So now when they come to us and say, look, this is a new technology, we don't know exactly where it's going. Let us make a little token deal now, and we'll cut you in. We've been down that road. For those of us who've been, we've heard it before, we don't trust you. We don't believe you. Had you treated us fairly before, the temperature might be different now. But they didn't. And I'm not saying the same parties. It's a systemic thing, I think. So I think right now what you have going on here is no matter what they present, and we don't know what the final, we're going to hear it on Saturday night, what the negotiating committee has negotiated, we're going to say, how can we trust them? How can we trust them? And that's unfortunate. And rather than treating this industry as a partnership, and I think all guilds should be partners, I even said, look, if there's an alliance of motion picture producers, why isn't there an alliance above the liners, where the writers and directors and screeners and actors all get together, and they have common interests, just like some of the studios have common interests, and they have diversities.
Yeah.
And say, why, in terms of your common interest, don't you form an alliance? I will say this, as a member of the Writers Guild, and having lived through 88, the thing that really has saved our bacon this time is the huge support of SAG. Had SAG not supported us, we would not have the leverage we have. And it's not about right, it's not about fair, it's not about just. All these things are about leverage and power. And the writers alone do not have the power. The writers with the actors behind them, or SAG behind them, have tremendous power.
What's the mechanics behind that?
I'm sorry?
What's the mechanics behind that?
From what I hear, it was an outreach between the head of the WGA going to the head of the SAG, and like we said, these issues that are confronting us are cross-guild issues. They are industry-wide issues. It's not like the internet is an issue just for writers or an issue just for directors. I wish we could form an alliance with the directors as well and have a directors, writers, actors alliance. For whatever reasons, that doesn't happen. And I think there was an outreach between the head of the Writers Guild and the head of SAG, staying in touch with us, realizing that they have a common interest, and staying joined. And the head of SAG, Alan Rosenberg, has managed to, you know, keep his membership, you know, realizing that, as said to me by many actors, your fight is our fight. And as long as we can stay that way, I think we have strength. If we lose that, then the writers lose a lot of leverage, as was witnessed by the Golden Globes. Had the actors chosen to show up at the Golden Globes, it doesn't matter that they didn't have writers. There would have been a Golden Globes.
Had you heard that Vanity Fair is pulling out their part?
I read that.
What do you think that means?
What do I think that means? I think that things are too up in the air as to whether what kind of an Oscar show there will be, because there hasn't been a waiver granted yet. I also think, and it was said by somebody, he said, look, even if the strike is settled tomorrow, which it won't, but even if it's settled, and it's still not a good time, it's going to be weeks before things ramp up again, people are still suffering, it might not be the time to have these massive, excessive, gaudy Hollywood parties.
Okay.
So those are the reasons that I've heard that Vanity Fair and other parties have been canceled.
Okay, so that's the basic difference between 88 and 2008.
And 2008, right.
Okay. Now, when I started talking to you before we rolled sound, you were talking about something that's really important to you. Will you share that with my audience?
The Laugh Factory thing?
Yes, please.
Yes. From the beginning of this strike, and the strike started before Christmas, I was very concerned about the hardship that was not brought upon the writers by the strike or the producers by the strike, but by all the people who were thrown out of work because of the strike, who had no vested interest in the outcome of it, and particularly at the holiday season, Christmas time, New Year's, and all that kind of stuff. And these are people who live paycheck to paycheck. They're not high-paid people or anything like that. So a buddy of mine is a guy named Jamie Masada, who runs a comedy club in Hollywood called Laugh Factory. He also has one in New York, and now he's opening one in Long Beach. And he's always been very philanthropic. And he said to me, he said, Bill, we've got to do something. And I said, okay, but it's got to be for the production people, not for the writers. We made our fate. So he said, absolutely. So I went to the Writers Guild and I said, look, is there a way that we can throw benefits? He was willing. What he wanted to do is say, look, I will have a Wednesday night show every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock. It's $20 admission to get into the club ordinarily. I will turn that $20 over, your each admission ticket, to a strike fund that will go to only the non-writing industry people, and they can get in to see the show for free. So he's basically just turning over the admissions. And we do that every Wednesday night, and it's open to the general public. And you come, you have a good time, and the more you support the show, the more money will go to the industry support fund for the all-industry people. And the guild set up this thing, not through the Writers Guild of America. I learned the difference, because the WGA is for writers, but the Writers Guild Foundation.
Oh.
set up a fund called the Industry Support Fund, which is for non-WGA members, non-WGA writers, and it's, you know, the below-the-liners, the industry support people who are striking. And we're trying to raise as much money as we can by these every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock benefits at the Laugh Factory on Hollywood Boulevard. And I just encourage the general public to come enjoy themselves. I mean, last night we had Dane Cook and Bob Saget and John Lovitz and have a good time at the same time they're supporting the people caught in the middle of the strike.
Do you happen to know the website where people can go to?
They could go to the Laugh Factory. They can call the Laugh Factory at 323-656-1336. Make reservation, check up on it, and it's like every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock, I'll be there. The only thing is that we say is it's either by cash or check, because if they use a credit card or do it online through Ticketmaster or something like that, we can't then support it.
Yeah.
So we advise people to come with cash or check, and we'll be happy to take them, you know, the money at the door and let you in for free and enjoy the show. And that money will go to the support fund.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that. I just want to know what got you in the Guild, and do you have any advice for aspiring writers in my listening audience?
I got into the Guild a long, long time ago when there were only three networks.
Now there's millions of channels.
And as everybody says to me, and I just have a different spin on things, I guess, a different view of things. When people say how, like, reality has hurt the business for writers and the sports has hurt the business for writers, I go, like, I have never seen a better time for writers because of the fragmentation of the business, because you're no longer in a three-network economy, because you've got all these outlets, cable, specialized, whatever it is, they all need product. Now, you might not get the same amount of money that you would get as if you were working for NBC or CBS or ABC, but you know what? In human terms, you do very well. And so I would say there's more opportunity now for a writer starting out. I mean, if they wind up a show that's on Lifetime or FX or Bravo or A&E or whatever, forget about the three networks. That's just a part of the business. And that to me is very encouraging. If I was starting out now, it'd be a whole new world, a whole different world. And the business model has changed. And I am empathetic to that side of it when the studios say, look, the business has changed. The business has changed. And we need to all address it together. So I would just say that start by writing. I teach a course at UCLA on writing a spec pilot. It's an online course, so people take it from all over the world. I mean, I've done it now for four or five times, and I've had students anywhere from New Zealand to Turkey to England to Canada
awesome.
To Florida. It's really an awesome thing. Now, it's an online course through UCLA Extension Writers Program, and some people don't like taking online courses or something like that, but I find, in terms of writing, I think an online course is terrific. As I say to people, if it were a course in sculpting, online wouldn't work. But for writing in a workshop, it's great. So I have that course where people can write their own spec pilot, and I'm all for writing spec material, and I think when you write a spec pilot or something original, people get an idea of what your original interest is and your original voice is. And that's also changed. I mean, years ago, if I had a spec pilot, nobody wanted to see it. Now I walk into a network or a studio, or when I was able to walk into a network or studio, and they say, look, if we read your spec Sex in the City or your spec Law and Order, we don't know who you are.
Yeah.
But if we read your spec pilot or spec feature, we know who you are.
Yeah.
And so I go, wow, there's a change.
Yeah.
So I just encourage that the best way to write is to sit down and write. Just the best way to learn, read. I'm a great believer in reading scripts, which thankfully with the internet, you can read millions of scripts right off the internet for free. Download them, whatever it is, screenplays, teleplays, whatever it is. Every show has its own website, which we're also talking about, where you can catch up on any show that you want to catch up on. And if you feel like you're going to respect one of those, you can find out the characters, the storylines, blah. It's all there. Now, the internet is amazing. And I encourage writers just to write. And forget about all the rules and all the technicalities and all the, as I say, the McKeeisms of the world, and don't worry about by page 20 you have to do this, and by page 10 you have to do this. Just write, and write it the way you envision it, and you see it, and in your own voice.
Awesome. Okay, as we wrap this up, you've heard me ask this question to your colleague. What is a more powerful invention for artists and writers, the internet or the printing press, and why?
For artists and writers, Well, I would have to say, obviously, the technology of the internet has a more immediate impact than anything that I've seen. I mean, I'm awed. Everything, I must say, I live my life. I found my wife on the internet.
Oh.
Yeah. I met my wife through the internet. I mean, it's like my house, my car. I mean, there is nothing that the internet has impacted every area of my life. But by the same token, I have to say that there had to be an evolution. There had to be a printing press. And there would be no internet without the printing press. I mean, what would we be reading?
You know, continuum.
Yeah. So I'm saying it's a hard thing to say, but I'd say in terms of immediate impact, mass communication, there is nothing like the internet. I read newspapers. It's one thing to say you want to read a newspaper. I read newspapers from around the world.
Uh-huh.
I read them all over the world online.
Okay, parting shots as we wrap this up.
My parting shots?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I hope that this trust, again, I want to see this over. I think we all want to see this over. I think it's gone on for too long, and I don't know what's going to come out of it on Saturday night. I don't think any of us really do when we're told what we have. My concern is that, you know, what happens with these guilds, the same is true of SAG and WGA in particular. When you have a huge membership that are unemployed, they have a militancy about them that can really hurt rather than help. And I think at this point we have to take a look and not rush to accept, but if we look at it and say, you know what, this is a good deal, this is a fair deal, just because we don't get all we want, or just we haven't covered every area that we want, I think we should say this town needs to get back to work. There are too many people besides us who are suffering.
From what I've heard, from what I've heard from everybody I've ever talked to, you didn't expect to get everything either.
You never expect to get everything. And as I say at the beginning, and I've known this, you know, for now, it's got nothing to do with what's right, what's fair, it's what your leverage is. And if you're out for 4 months, what is your leverage? You know, it's like I said, I mean, I hear the rumors about, like, and I truly believe the rumors, that we're being punished, you know, by the AMB.
You believe that?
I think the strategy from the beginning has been that they never did want to talk to, our contract just had to be the first one up. We were the first ones in the barrel. That's, you know, that was the luck of the draw. I wish we weren't. I think we all wish we weren't. I wish the actors were first. You know, I mean, they shut the business down in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So we were the first up, and I don't think that the AMPTP ever really wanted to deal with us. I think they always wanted to deal with the DGA first. Then they had 3 months to go before they were, or 2 months to go before they dealt with the DGA. And I think the plan was to deal with the DGA first because the DGA is always more amenable than the WGA is. And so they wanted to use them, and they just stalled us and stalled us and stalled us. And that was the strategy. And so they made the deal with the DGA. All right, now we'll come back and we'll talk to the writers. And when they negotiated with the DGA, the heads of the studios negotiated with them. When they negotiated with us, corporate lawyers negotiated with us.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think this was their strategy to begin with, and I don't think we should fall in, be rushed to approve what they wanted to approve because they're concerned about the Oscars or they're concerned about whatever it is they might be concerned about. But by the same token, I think this town has suffered a lot. And I think the CEOs have to take that into consideration too, which I don't think factors into their judgment.
No,
not at all. You know, and that's unfortunate.
All right. Thank you very much for your time and for your empathy for people like me.
That was Bill Taub at the picket line in front of Disney Studios. We'll conclude today's episode with Garrett Dowen.
Okay. I'm Garrett Dowen. I'm a screenwriter, member of the Writers Guild of America West, and one of the things I do during our strike is on the picket line, I move up and down the curb getting in the cars that go by, and believe me, there are many of them on Pico, to honk their horns and make a lot of racket. The more irritating I can make it for the suits inside the studio, the happier I feel.
Have you heard any reports?
Yes, it's driving them crazy.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you. No. I take great pride in that.
What's your secret?
A smile, teasing them, putting on a little bit of song and dance, and making it fun. And so they get a kick out of it, they honk their horns, and pretty soon you've got 5, 6, 7, 8 cars honking, and it is really, really loud, and it's fun.
where are we at today? I mean, I know why we're here, but for my audience, why are we here?
We're here because the industry is at a crossroads right now. The future of residuals and the financial base that riders live on is undergoing a drastic metamorphosis. Residuals, as we know it today, aren't going to exist because we have this new media, this huge elephant in the room called new media, which represents, quite frankly, a whole new avenue through which people are going to access entertainment. And the business model today involving DVDs, reruns on television, that's going to go away because everything is going to be pay-per-view, video on demand, immediate access. People are no longer going to be a prisoner of the TV guide. You're going to watch a show when you want to watch it. There'll be no such thing as 9 o'clock on NBC. It'll be what you want to watch at 9 o'clock.
It's called time shifting.
Exactly. And the whole residual structure that we as creators live on and depend on is changing. And the industry has been very reluctant to share with us this bounty that is forthcoming.
What do you need them for, then, if you can do it for yourself?
Well, there are some people who are doing that. There are a number of writers and producers have gotten together and started producing shows directly for the Internet. But I think you'll always need some form of institutionalized production. And the studios represent that. They're not going to go away. We're bedfellows, and we have to learn to live together and share. And that's all we're asking for. We want the industry to share with us. We want a fair contract so that we as the creators, because that's what we are, we create shows, we create films. Without us, there is no work. It all begins with a screenplay. We're responsible for the thousands of people in this town going to work because we create scripts and films, scripts and screenplays. And we want to share in the resources that those creative efforts generate.
Now, I understand there's a media blackout, and so I want to control the rumor mill even though I'm part of the press. And I don't want to deny that there is a buzz going on right now. What do you want my listeners to know at this stage of the game?
That we truly, truly want a fair contract. We want to get this town back to work. Nobody wants the strike. We didn't want it from day one. The AMPT walked out. We didn't walk out. They walked out twice. We want to resolve this. All we want is a fair contract. We're trying hard to end it. We're trying hard to negotiate a fair contract so everybody can get back to work. Because as my colleague said, it really pains me to realize that a lot of people are suffering. Not just writers, but people who depend on the industry for a livelihood. I feel badly about that, but this is about issues that are bigger than any one of us. It's about the future of the industry.
Let's get personal for a minute. What got you in the Guild?
I wrote a screenplay for a production company that was shooting in South Africa, Morocco, and the United States, and that was my ticket in.
Has it made it to the screen?
It's in pre-production right now.
Oh, good job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have any advice for aspiring writers?
Read. Read great writers. Read plays. Read novelists. Read screenplays. The best way you can learn to become a writer is by reading great writers.
Who inspires you as a writer?
Hemingway, Faulkner, Upton Sinclair, Arthur Miller, Tennessee Williams, and the Greeks. We can't forget the Greeks.
Yeah.
Aeschylus, Euripides, Sophocles. That was my freshman reading. So.
When did you know you wanted to be a writer? How old were you?
I fought it for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, fought it very hard because my father was a journalist and I wasn't going to follow my father's footsteps. So I became a photojournalist. And I was a stringer for UPI. That's how I started my career. But finally, I gave in to disease. It was in my blood, and I couldn't deny it anymore. So finally, I gave in and surrendered. But instead of becoming a journalist, I became a screenwriter.
Okay, I have a question, and we'll wrap this up. I'm curious, as a writer and as a journalist, well, you're not a journalist, so as the offspring of a journalist, what is a more powerful invention, the Internet or the printing press? And please don't say because the printing print was first. The printing press was first. If it is a printing press, I want an original answer.
Realistically, in terms of the number of people affected and the influence it can have, I would have to say the Internet is really crowding on the top.
And how come?
Because of its access. I mean, today, look what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, you have terrorists using the Internet to stir up their own followers. You have education and communication going on at a heartbeat. I can access my university library in a heartbeat. Libraries are becoming somewhat
cyberies.
Antiquated. Right, because they're cyberries. So in terms of the effect, the influence, and how it affects the individual human being, I would say the internet is far more influential, because you have to understand that when the Gutenberg press was invented, how many people could read, number one, and what was your distribution? What was your access? Yes, it revolutionized history, but in terms of affecting everybody on a day-to-day basis, you can't compare with the internet.
Okay. Since the internet has disrupted the entertainment industry through its technology, the internet has also disrupted the news, news and journalism. Can you comment on that?
I don't think it's disrupted the entertainment industry.
But nobody's reading.
I think it's opened up new avenues. It's opened up new avenues of access. It is a revolution, and it is the communication of tomorrow and today.
What about people not reading papers anymore and getting their news off the internet?
I frankly think that's unfortunate, because I think you get a lot more from reading a newspaper than you do from reading a newspaper on the website, because your access tends to be too selective. When you look at a newspaper, you got a whole slew of stories right in front of you, and you can read headlines, and go deeper into stories you want to access. I think people don't read as thoroughly on the internet when they read newspapers, and that's just my personal opinion. I could be wrong, but it's my sense.
Hey, I didn't mean to step on you. I thought you were going in another direction. So you don't think that technology is disrupting the industry?
No, I think it's expanding the industry. I think it's giving us more access. More people are going to be able to access entertainment. As I said, the whole approach, the whole avenue through which people access entertainment is changing. And it's going to be more accessible, more variety, when you want it.
Okay. Any hope for the future as we wrap this up?
In terms of what, the strike or the industry?
The strike and the industry.
I'm hopeful that we can bring this to a close soon. As you have heard, there's some positive spin going on. I hope that it's true.
Where is that spin coming from?
I would say it's coming from unquoted sources on both sides of the line. Unfortunately, because there's a press blackout and people shouldn't be talking, but they are. But having said that, I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful, because I think I speak for all of my colleagues. We want this strike to end.
Thank you very much for your time. You've been very generous. Thank you.
That's great.
You have been listening to the Writer Strike Chronicle podcast, available for free through iTunes. For more information, visit us at www.strikechronicles.com. To contact us, please call 310-439-8754 or send us an email at info@strikechronicles.com.